Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
We are here at your service. I'm Johnny Rabbit. We're on KMOX. And, well, gosh, look who's here. We have a special guest in the studio. I will introduce you to in just a couple of minutes. Welcome to our Johnny Rabbit Easter edition of At Your Service on KMOX, which we'll introduce you to several interesting people. There'll be Danny Eichenhorst, and what's up with liquor licenses in St. Louis? Maybe you saw an article that she was in, I think, a couple of days ago in page one of the Post. Plus, she'll talk about some of the places that she co-owns, dining places, and one of them has a Johnny Rabbit special. Well, if you've ever passed Hampton at Holly Hills, maybe you've seen that sign on the west side of the street about a train depot and wondered, what the heck's that all about? You'll find out from the engineer, so to speak, of the place, Kyle Feintich. He's also with one of our great KMOX advertisers, Midwest Money, which is right across the street from the train depot. Greatest of all World's Fair, coming back to its birthplace of Forest Park for a once-in-a-generation exhibition. That's at the Missouri History Museum. Don't go today. It's not open yet. It'll start on April 27th. Our friend Sam Moore, I guess he's the official barker of the 1904 World's Fair Revisited, will give us the inside story. There was even an inside in at the World's Fair, as well as a menu of the many other events. There's so many things going on today of great interest to St. Louisans about all kinds of stuff at that lively St. Louis institution. Years ago, it was a very sleepy place. It is no more. The Missouri History Museum. And we'll have a conversation with one of the top radio newsmen of our time, who for years and years and more years had the great role, an enviable role, of being the CBS White House correspondent. His countless reports aired here on KMOX, and today we'll get his perspective on several topics and about his life growing up in our area. He grew up in Granite City. But we're going to start our At Your Service Easter adventure by introducing you to Jackie Dana. Jackie is the creator and guiding light. Remember that program, The Guiding Light? That was a great soap opera. Ran on KMOX and CBS. Well, she's the guiding light of the super St. Louis website called Unseen St. Louis. I mean, it is really an interesting place to look. You're going to really enjoy it. So since she's right here at a KMOX microphone, we'll ask her to tell us all about Unseen St. Louis and more. Jackie Dana, thank you very much for being here. You're very kind, very considerate. And what did you? And thank you for coming in on Easter Sunday, too.
Well, thank you for inviting me down here.
What about Unseen St. Louis? In a first on a nutshell, so to speak, what is it? What happens?
Well, Unseen St. Louis is what they call, it's a Substack. So that
What is that?
It's a platform where you can write articles and it sends it out as a newsletter. So it's a kind of a cross between a blog and a newsletter. So you can subscribe to it for free and get all the things coming in your inbox, or you can just go to it like a regular blog or website.
So you go to what?
The easiest way to get there is just unseenstl.com.
Okay, that is easy enough. You're from this area, right?
I am indeed. Born and raised.
Where?
My first home was in Ferguson, and then when I was a teenager, we moved to the Shaw neighborhood.
Well, yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, and then I went to school at Mizzou and moved away for a while, and now I'm back.
So, Shaw neighborhood, where? Where did you live?
I lived at Flora and 39th Street.
Did you live on 39th or Flora?
On Flora.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So did I.
Oh, really?
Maybe.
Yes. I think my dad said something about that. He's probably listening right now going, yep, I sure did.
Well, good for him. I lived at 4264. That's the second house, south side of the street, second house from Tower Grove, across from Wood. When I lived there, it was the old entrance to Shaw's Garden.
Me too.
And we hated days like today because our streets would be packed. It wasn't a dead end at Flora at that point. And there were so many people parking, you could hardly get into your driveway or in front of your house. A very nice street. Still a nice street.
It's a very nice street.
I know John Pertzborn from Channel 2 lived there for quite a few years. And a lot of interesting characters that lived under Mayor Cervantes.
Yep.
The list goes on. Now, so when were you there?
I was there in the 80s.
Now, so then what happened? You're gone from St. Louis.
I went to Mizzou and I majored in English. And then I got my master's in history, specifically Irish history, with Kirby Miller. I don't know what he's up to now, but he was a phenomenal professor. And then I moved to Austin, Texas, and lived there for a long time and moved back here in 2019.
So why did you go to Austin?
I just really liked it, and I wanted a change. And back in the late 80s, early 90s, it was a very different city than it is today. And it was a really fun place to live, very creative, lots of music, lots of fun things to do. But it got very crowded and very expensive, and I missed having seasons, and I just missed St. Louis. I didn't realize how much I would enjoy being back until I came back and found that this was a really good spot for me.
When you came back, where did you settle? In the Shaw neighborhood?
No, I live out in the county.
Oh, in the county. Think of that.
I actually want to move back into the city proper, but the cards aren't quite there for me yet.
Yeah, well, maybe someday.
Yes, that's my goal.
I should hope so. I started writing fiction? What you're talking when you talk about Unseen St. Louis, that's factual, right?
Yes.
So, but you were also, or maybe still are, a fiction writer.
Yes, I am a fiction writer. I write novels. I'm a very slow writer. I have one published. I have a bunch that are close to being done. And I actually started a Substack to write about my fiction and storytelling. And on that, I started writing a couple articles about St. Louis history just for the hell of it, and turned out that that was really fun and wanted to keep going, so I have. And so, I created my own Substack just for that.
Good. And it's unique. How many posts do you have on it?
I don't know.
Lots.
There's a bunch because I write articles, but then I also have a monthly history talk series, and I always have a post that tells people what's coming up and then a recap that has an audio and the slides and things afterwards. So,
were you always interested in St. Louis history, like when you were growing up, going to school here? No?
Not at all. And we didn't really learn much other than Dred Scott in high school. And I feel like that's a real omission. And I hope schools are better about it now because St. Louis has such a great history. I mean, our industrial growth, all the immigration we had to the city from different countries, our architecture, all the stories, all the famous people, the musicians. There's just so much history here to completely leave that out of our high school history education seems like a real shame.
Now, during the pandemic, you wrote, fantasy?
Yeah, well, I write fantasy fiction, and one of the things I was doing as I started this series set in St. Louis, it's a young adult series, part of it was that it involves fairies, and I was setting it where people could go to different places in the city to basically make a wish, and like parks and things like that. Mm-hmm. So where I was out and about just exploring the city for possible settings for this when I discovered this bridge down at Hampton and Manchester and wanted to know why it was there. It's this 100-year-old bridge, and it's very out of place. And if anybody knows that area, it crosses the River de Pere right across the street from Nick's Pub. And there's railroad tracks there, and then there's not really anything there for this old bridge. And so that's what I started digging into and discovered all the history. There used to be a Sulphur Spring down there. The Laclede Christie Clay Factory was there, plus Winkle Terracotta was across the street, a lot of other clay industry, clay mines. And this whole world opened up when I just asked, why is this bridge here? And it was built when they channelized the River de Pere in the 20s, and they moved the river slightly to the north, and they put that bridge so that people could get into Laclede Christie. And once I started doing that, I realized how much history there really was in the city to write about. And so a lot of my early articles were just, why is this here? Or what is this building? Or something like that. And now I'm a little bit more organized with what I'm writing, but that's really how it started, was just asking questions.
Sure, yeah, that's the best way to do it.
Yep.
And you'll find people will want to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about it.
There's a lot of people interested in history and a lot of people doing history, whether professionally or just on their own as a hobby in the city. It's amazing. I did not expect that.
Jackie Dana, we'll be right back to talk more with Jackie from Unseen St. Louis, unseensdl.com. And what we're going to next talk about is research. And how the heck do you have the time to do all the research? Because you can't just make it up. If you're doing factual things, you can't just say, well, so-and-so told me such and such. You got to find out more. Research is a very big deal for all writers, all historians in St. Louis. We'll find out a lot more about that in a little bit. Peter Mayer will be here, White House correspondent for years after years after years on the CBS radio network. A lot of stuff for us to talk about of what's going on in the world today and some things about the past as well. You're at your service here with yours truly, Johnny Rabbit and KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Taking a tour, so to speak, of St. Louis, and our tour guide here is Jackie Dana, and we've talked about Unseen St. Louis, unseenstl.com. You got to look at that. This is really interesting. How long has that been going on?
A couple of years.
Well, that's a long time. So,
yeah.
And people, to be honest, I didn't know about it until last week.
Now, so, well, yeah, you know about it now, and that's all that counts.
And that's why we're talking. So people should know about this. And the thing to do that is look at this history that you've been writing. But you've got to do research for it. So where do you go? How do you do it?
Well, I started off doing what I call quick and dirty research. And I recognize as somebody with graduate work in history, I consider myself a historian. I'm professionally trained. But I was doing most of my research online. And it's remarkable how much is actually available online, both articles that people have written, but also a lot of newspapers and other resources that have been digitized. But lately, I've been going to the Missouri Historical Society, their library on Skinker, and they have a remarkable collection of materials. And I just have to do a shout out to them. The librarians there are so helpful, and you don't have to know anything about research. You don't have to know anything about archives. They will point you to the resources to find what you need, and then they bring it out to you, and they even make scans or photocopies of everything for free. So they make it exceptionally easy. And so I've been using them, and I'm going to be doing a lot more research there now that I kind of have my sea legs, so to speak, on some stuff and have a little bit more knowledge about St. Louis history and know what to look for.
Well, there is a lot there. 225 South Skinker, right across from the park, Forest Park, on the west side of the street, the old United Hebrew Temple, a great archive. And the things that they do bring out for display are all stored in an adjoining building there. And they as you said, they are so helpful. Though that's just one place. There are other sources.
Oh, there's a ton of different archives in just the St. Louis area. I haven't explored them all yet, but you can go up to UMSL. There's the Mercantile Library.
Terrific place.
Yeah, I haven't been there yet, but that's on my list. I'm going to hopefully be paying a visit to the Park Service Archives, which I believe are in the old post office building, and doing some research with the Circuit Courts and So in the next couple months, I'm expecting to visit a lot of different places because I have projects that require me to go back to the mid-1800s, and you can't really do that so much online.
Now, how are you scheduling this? Do you have like a big sheet
of
plan?
Oh, no. Everything I do is by the seat of my pants. So I don't really have articles planned out. I don't have I run a meetup group, and I don't really have those things planned out more than a couple months in advance. I laugh because there's another St. Louis history meetup, and she has things planned like years in advance. I don't even know what we're doing in July. So that's kind of me.
Who are you talking about?
That's the St. Louis Historic Sites meetup. And they go to a lot of houses and churches and do some other kinds of things. Mine is Unseen STL History Adventures, and we do some of those same kind of things, but I also like to go places that maybe aren't as familiar or aren't on the beaten path. One thing I'm really excited about is we're going to be doing the first tour of City Hall in at least a decade, and I'm working with somebody there to actually see the building and talk about some of the history there.
What an interesting building, a great history. And if you haven't been in there, I mean, it's a huge place. I love the aldermanic chambers, except there's no air conditioning.
Yeah. So, and that's actually another place I've been doing research is the St. Louis Public Library, the Central Library, right across the street from where we are here. Yep. Their St. Louis room has enormous amounts of resources for research as well.
And the State Historical Society of Missouri, yep. I recommend that.
Yep.
As well, A.J. Medlock there, I spoke to him about you just a couple of days ago, and he said he certainly hoped that you'll come and see him. And it's right there by Mercantile. I mean, it's next door. It's like as close to like 10 feet away from the two entrances. But the Mercantile has the material there. Most of the things for the state are in Columbia, Missouri.
Right.
But it's digitized, and you can find so many great things. And there are other sources, too.
Yeah, I would like to say, anybody that's listening that thinks this is interesting, you don't have to have a graduate degree in history. You don't have to have historical training to use most of these resources. I can't say 100%, but for a lot of them, certainly the Historical Society, anybody can go in there. If you want to do research about your house or your parents or just some interesting aspect of St. Louis, you can go in there and they'll help you out.
And you can find out things that you're looking into, what, the 1849, the Great Fire.
I'm doing research on, I've just did a bunch of research on our 10th mayor, Brian Malanfi, who I'm a big fan of now. I've got a bunch of materials on my Substack already, and I'm going to be doing more. I'm going to be writing basically the history of his world. So basically 1840s when he was a circuit court judge and then mayor. That includes the fire of 1849. That includes the cholera epidemic. That includes the freedom suits that the enslaved people would bring up to say that they should actually legally be free. He oversaw some of those cases and a whole bunch of other things that happened in the city in that decade that people don't often know about.
And he was the son of John Malanfi.
Yes, he was the son of John Malanfi, who was the he was an Irish immigrant who came here in the early 1800s and was the first millionaire for the city. And one of Brian Malanfi's claims to fame is that he inherited all this money and he gave a third of it to the city of St. Louis, initially to help immigrants, but it's been used to help impoverished people in a variety of capacities since then.
And what about the fires? We've had a lot of bad fires. A couple of warehouses.
Yep. And
churches.
It's kind of a joke that I've written, I think, now 3 articles about buildings that have burned down. I'm like, I really need to get away from that. That is not my goal, is to write about buildings that have burned down. I'd like to maybe save those buildings and write about them while they're still up. But one of them actually ties into my research, and that was the Malanfi Immigrant Home that burned down last fall. And that was built out of Brian Malanfi's money that he entrusted to the city and had been used for a lot of different things, but it had been vacant and they had tried to renovate it. But then a new owner came in and didn't do anything and let it fall apart, which is unfortunately the story of so many of these buildings.
That's so true. Now you get out and see people, too. You have a history talk every month. What is it? The third Thursday?
The third Thursday of every month at Spine Bookstore and Cafe. We do.
Where is that?
That's on Arsenal Street, 1982 Arsenal, right by Benton Park. And every month we have different speakers. Coming up in April, on April 18th, I'm very excited. We're going to have Meg Lusto from the city's Cultural Resources Office and Michael Allen, who, among other things, is the executive director of the National Building Arts Center. And we're going to be talking about historic preservation, how it works, how we decide what buildings to save, what gets demolished, what people can do to maybe get involved. And so if anybody's interested in trying to help save some of these buildings, that'll be a great talk to attend.
Spine Books and Cafe, 1982 Arsenal. What does it cost?
$5 a cover for those.
And what? How many? 30, 40, 50 people?
Yeah, the place holds 50 to 60 if we cram people in, and sometimes it is just standing room only.
Oh, that's
so I always
wonderful.
Recommend people get there early.
That's great. Now, how do you let people know about this, besides something like what we're doing now?
It's all on the Substack, and then I also have a Facebook page, and I post it there.
One more time, Substack. What? I don't really quite understand what that is.
It's just another platform for blogging, but like I say, it also has the newsletter component. Mm-hmm. So unlike most websites that you have to remember to go check out, this will deliver you everything I write in your inbox in email.
So how do you go to Substack? What do you?
All you have to do is go to unseenstl.com.
Oh, okay.
And then any article, there'll be a button to subscribe.
Well, sounds good, Jackie. Thank you very much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Come back again sometime.
Oh, absolutely.
And we'll talk
anytime.
More. Okay. Jackie Dana, Love St. Louis, past, present, and future.
Absolutely.
And this is a great thing that she's doing, and maybe other people will have some ideas. Hey, I ought to write about something. Maybe you have some special interest in a subject in St. Louis, or in Missouri, or in the greater St. Louis area. Peter Mayer. Many years, a White House correspondent for CBS Radio, so all those years heard here in KMOX as well as on the network. He's going to be with us in a few minutes. We'll talk about the passing of Joe Lieberman and many other topics when you come back, and I hope you do, to this show. This is Johnny Rabbit. I'm at your service on KMOX. Johnny Rabbit and KMOX. Right now, let's go back 43 years and one day ago. Listen.
When Ronald Reagan was elected president in November 1980, he hoped to defy an unusually grim circumstance of that office. In the seven previous even-numbered decades, every U.S. president had died in office, four times from assassin's bullets. A few months later, on March 30th, 1981, as President Reagan strolled outside the Washington Hilton Hotel, he nearly met the same fate.
Here is a news bulletin from the RKO Radio Network. This just in, shots have reportedly been fired as President Reagan left the Washington Hilton Hotel this afternoon. White House officials say the president was not hit, but there are reports that three people were wounded by gunfire.
Well, we know the rest of the story is a little different than that RKO radio report. Now, Peter Mayer is here. Now, you were never with RKO Radio News, I assume. No, Peter is maybe not there. I hope to hear him. I know he's on the phone somewhere. We're searching for him right now.
Hello?
And I, you know, RKO Radio News, I don't even remember it, really. Maybe it was more there used to be WRKO Radio and East Coast stuff. Radio, RKO, if a lot of people don't know, the movie studios and so on, it stood, the name, the letter stood for Radio Keith Orpheum. And Peter Mayer is going to tell us a little bit about all kinds of things that are going on today. Peter, welcome back to KMOX. Nope, we're not welcoming him back. We are welcoming him back. Peter, are you there?
I hope so. Hi, Johnny.
I hope so, too. Well, look at you. My gosh, there you are surrounded with all your, well, you've given away some of your archives, haven't you? We've got institutions that are clamoring for all this.
Well, I don't know if they're clamoring, but some of my things have gone to some presidential libraries and some military libraries, and I've, you know, making my wife very happy. And I know Mrs. Rabbit from our conversations would like to see some of the same things going on there at the rabbit hutch.
Oh, would she ever? I think we talk about just about every day. What are you going to do with all this stuff?
Every time the mares and the rabbits get together, we talk about this.
We sure do. When are you coming back to St. Louis for a visit?
I'm not sure yet. Nothing on the immediate calendar, but I miss you and Gwen and of course, my own family there.
Oh, of course. And you're from Granite City, correct?
Yes, indeed. And you were talking about the day that Ronald Reagan was shot.
Yes.
And, you know, I think about it quite often. Sometimes when I'm walking around in D.C., I pass by the Ronald Reagan Institute for Emergency Medicine at George Washington University Hospital.
My goodness.
That, of course, is where he was taken.
Hmm.
It wasn't named that at the time, but he certainly put that ER on the map. And as those initial reports that you played indicated, Johnny, they did not think that Ronald Reagan had been hit. And it was an alert Secret Service agent, Jerry Parr, who noticed bright red blood droplets coming from President Reagan's, the corner of his mouth.
Ooh.
And he knew from his training that was very, very serious. And he ordered, they were taking the limousine to the White House. And he said, turn it around and take it to GW, George Washington University Hospital. And that's where Ronald Reagan's life was saved. And, of course, it was an awful day, besides the president being hit. A Secret Service agent and a D.C. police officer were wounded and survived their wounds. But the most grievous injury went to a wonderful man from Centralia, Illinois, Jim Brady, the president's press secretary, who I had known when I worked in local radio in Illinois. He represented the Illinois Medical Association as sort of a spokesman. And Jim was just universally really, I can say, adored by reporters who knew him. He was just a jovial guy, but he suffered just a terrible, terrible brain wound. And he and his wife, the late Sarah Brady, both devoted the rest of their lives to working for gun control.
Isn't that, it is really a remarkable story when you go back and think about that. And that is a really long time ago that happened, over 40 years now.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It, you know, but for those of us who were there, I'm not going to say it seems like yesterday,
right,
but the memories of that day are certainly embedded. I was working for the Mutual Radio Network at the time, and the next day I was sent to the hospital where I was fortunate to interview two of the doctors who had treated President Reagan and talked about the seriousness of his wounds, and he was in the hospital for some time. And another remarkable memory that comes back is that on the 25th anniversary of that awful day, I went down to Texas and I interviewed George H.W. Bush, who, of course, was the vice president at the time. And I wanted to get his memories for a CBS News special that we were doing on the 25th anniversary of the Reagan assassination attempt, and met with President Bush, then former President Bush, in his office in Houston. And he said, remarkably, he said to me, "Johnny, would you mind if I took out my diary and read my notes from that day?"
Oh, my goodness.
He said, I don't want to rely on my memory.
That's amazing.
And he told me that he had written, I believe, on a napkin on Air Force Two, because he was flying at the time, you know, "Dear friend, you know, Ronald Reagan, dear friend, he must survive." And, you know, they wanted President Bush, then Vice President Bush, flew back to Washington from wherever he was that day. My memory fails me on where he was, flew back to Washington, and they wanted him to chopper from Andrews Air Force Base to the South Lawn of the White House, and he refused. He said, only the president lands on the South Lawn, not the vice president, and just, you know, get me back into the city from Andrews, which is, you know, a number of miles away, a few miles away from downtown D.C. Just get me back to the city and we'll reassure the country that the line of succession is in order.
When you were talking about the Mutual Broadcasting System last night, I was listening to The Saint with Vincent Price, which was a series on Mutual. Dan, I was thinking about a guy that I used to listen to doing the news, Del Sharbat. Do you remember
him? Oh, yes. I never met Del. He had left Mutual not too long before I got there. And do you know what he's best known for?
No.
Del Sharbat came up with the phrase, or I don't know whether he came up with it, but he was the one who uttered the phrase on the Campbell's Soup commercials. Mm-mm, good.
That's terrific. Yeah. What a legacy that is.
Little radio trivia for you there, Johnny.
That is a good one. How about a book? Are you going to do a book about all this stuff?
Who would read it?
I don't know. You never know until you put it out. You get the right cover and you get the right promotion. A lot of people would read it, but it is not an easy thing to do.
No, it isn't. I'm asked this all the time by people I went to Granite City High School with. A friend of mine in Granite City, Marcia Galloway Chomko, is one of the big promoters of, when are you going to write the book?
A 45th anniversary has arrived, Three Mile Island nuclear disaster.
Yes, I covered that. That was, you know, there are a number of life-changing experiences that you go through in this business, life-changing assignments, and TMI, Three Mile Island, was one of them. I still remember driving from D.C. My boss at Mutual called and said, you know, there's been an accident at Three Mile Island. You know, did Peter Mayer know anything about the way nuclear reactors worked? No way. You know, and I had to have a crash course going there, listening to broadcasts and reading when I got there. Driving from D.C. to the area around Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, you take a State Route 15 in Maryland, and you go, you know, towards Harrisburg. You pass by near where Camp David is, actually, and I see a stream of headlights heading my way, and I don't see anybody driving in the direction that I'm coming in because they're all evacuating from there. It's like going into a reporter driving into a hurricane, the famous stories of just seeing all the people, you know, going away, and you see nobody in your rearview mirror. But, you know, this was March 28th, 1979, probably, well, almost a decade before the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, and a nuclear reactor at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania had what was called a partial meltdown. And, you know, there was a movie out. Do you remember the movie that was out then that was a you know, very popular movie, The China Syndrome?
Oh, yeah.
And that was at the same time. And this was, you know, the worst nuclear disaster in U.S. history. You had a combination of things that went wrong, malfunctions, human error, and there were some limited radioactive gases that went out into the atmosphere around Three Mile Island at the time, Johnny. It wasn't as damaging as what happened later at Chernobyl or at Fukushima in Japan. Nobody died at Three Mile Island, thank goodness. But 2 million people, they said, were exposed to small amounts of radiation, and 140,000 people were evacuated from the area. And, you know, when you're studying classical literature and so forth, you study the various fears, and one of them is the fear of the unknown.
That's true.
And that was what kept going through my mind was, you know, the fear of the unknown. Am I being exposed to radiation here? How is this going to affect me and everyone else here? And I still remember, you know, you try to do some interviews on the scene, and I interviewed a mom and a dad and a little girl, and the little girl said that she was having all kinds of nightmares that her bunny had died.
Oh, my goodness.
And that you know, really kind of brought it home to the listeners as to what the atmosphere was there at Three Mile Island. 45 years ago, it didn't get a lot of notice in the media this week. So many other things are going on and have overtaken it. But it is something that, you know, we have to remember. And by the way, the reactor is not operating now, the TMI number 2 nuclear reactor. They permanently shut it down after the accident, Johnny. The coolant system was drained. It took some time for that process. Radioactive water that was contaminated was decontaminated, and it took, you know, a while for the radioactive waste removal to be removed from there. People there are still, I think this past week they met with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and there's still some angst about the site itself.
I would imagine so. So it's physically the plant is still there.
Yes, yes, you can, you know, it is still there, looming over that area. We were given, most of the people there, I guess the reporters were given, and I guess civilians also, these little yellow sort of tubular things that you put on your shirt or your coat, like a ballpoint pen, and they were dosimeters. And you would look inside like a little telescope to see if it registered anything in terms of exposure to radioactive, you know, in the atmosphere, radioactive particles. And mine never registered anything. I still have it in a box here at home. One of those things that, you know, I should probably send to some Pennsylvania Historical Museum or something.
I would think so. I would think they'd be most interested in that. Very unusual. We're going to come right back. I want to talk to you, if you have time, about this Rana fiasco at NBC and what that is all about. So if you'll stand by, there he is. Oh, Peter Mayer. What do you listen to as far as news in the radio? Do you have any favorite newscasters today or stations that you listen to for news or networks?
Well, Very good question. Of course, my heart is still with CBS Radio News. I think that the morning team on CBS of Debbie Rodriguez and Steve Kathan, who's the anchor of the CBS World News Roundup, they are two of the best. And I have some very good friends at NPR, Don Gagne, their political reporter, and I traveled many, many miles together. So those are a couple of my favorites.
Very good. We'll come right back, talk more with Peter Mayer. You're here on KMOX. I'm Johnny Rabbit, filling in this afternoon. Be here to 5. Got a couple more, get three more guests, and I think you're going to be interested in hearing. One is Sam Moore from the Missouri History Museum. He will be our next guest right after the 4 o'clock news on KMOX. So it is, Maria. Thank you. Nice to hear your voice. And, well, let's go back to Peter Mayer. I have no idea, Peter, why this came to mind. Something I used to love, going to the movies and hear Westbrook, Van Voorhees, and others do the newsreels. Of course, that's another world, another time.
Yes, indeed. There's good news tonight.
Gabriel Heater, a great Mutual announcer. Well, let's talk about this deal that at NBC is, I don't know, that they hired this person. Who did they hire and why did they hire her?
Well, that was not good news for NBC. Quite a spectacle, unprecedented, Ron. Johnny, Ron.
Whatever. That's all right.
Was the hiring of the former head of the Republican National Committee that just caused an internal firestorm at NBC News, not because she was a Republican and not because she was a former chair of the RNC. Goodness knows there are plenty of people who have been in that revolving door here in Washington through the years. And in fact, a former chair of the Republican Party is on MSNBC now as a host. Hmm. So that was not the issue. The issue, most prominently to the former host of Meet the Press, my friend Chuck Todd, was that she had participated in the big lie about the election being stolen. Not only did she participate in it, she helped promote it. And that was the problem. Not that she was a Republican, not that she was a conservative, but that she had been one of the biggest defenders of that whole story. And in fact, the attempt by Donald Trump and those around him to overturn the election itself. And she was directly involved in her home state of Michigan. And all of this just really, irked, to say the least, a parade of people on NBC, starting with Chuck Todd.
Even lawsuits were threatened?
Well, she is now threatening a lawsuit because she was dismissed. There have been a lot of questions about what her deal was in terms of the amount of money that she will be getting because of that. The report was that she was going to pull down $300,000 for being a commentator on NBC. And I think, from what I read, she wanted twice that. So that'll all be tied up in negotiations between her lawyers and the legal eagles at NBC.
Ronna McDaniels, who we're talking about, what do you think is going to happen with her career? What will she think? She'll go to a different network?
I would think so. I would think that, one of the right-leaning outfits will, make a deal with her now, and she'll be even more prominent. She's a member of the Romney family. She is Senator Mitt Romney's niece, and when she became head of the Republican National Committee, Donald Trump required her to drop the name Romney. She always went, we all knew her in the news business and in the political circles as Ronna Romney McDaniel. Hmm. And he, because he had tangled with Mitt Romney on so many things, Romney is one of the most outspoken critics, he made her drop her middle name. Can you imagine?
Amazing. It really is. It's an unusual situation that is far from over.
Right. I think NBC would like it to be mostly over, but, I think it's going to be, the embers are going to be glowing for a while.
I think so. And we just have a minute left to talk about Senator Joe Lieberman.
Oh, yes. Senator Lieberman died this past week from complications of a fall. Oh. And, he was involved in this no labels movement to get a centrist presidential ballot ticket. And it just was such a surprise. And he, of course, will always be remembered as the first Jewish candidate on a national ticket, so chosen in 2000, Johnny, of course, by Al Gore. Mm-hmm. And that was his running mate. And I was there in Nashville, Tennessee, at a big rally in downtown Nashville when he formally announced that Lieberman would be his choice. And the exact quote was, "You know, there are some people who might actually call this Al's selection as an act of chutzpah." And that's what, an act of guts that Lieberman said that day. And he said, "Al Gore, I thank you for making this miracle possible for me and breaking this barrier for the rest of America forever."
Thank you, Peter Mayer. It's so good for you to be here. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Johnny.
Johnny Rabbit.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly!